Have you heard of the little church that could? Join Pastor Bob Enyart at Denver Bible Church for Sunday school at 9:30 a.m., worship service from 10:50 until noon, and our Sunday evening Bible study at 6 p.m. Located at Two Roads School at 7180 Oak Street in Arvada, Colorado. Join us on Sundays as we study the meat of the Word of God, to worship our awesome Creator and to equip the saints for the service of the Lord.
One morning, there's truth up ahead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Today we are continuing yesterday's program, so I hope you enjoy this.
There is overwhelming testimony from evolutionary biologists that everything you just said is completely wrong, and I have in front of me quotes and specifics. You might claim that I'm taking them out of context, but I'll post the references on this show summary. I am not taking it out of context. The very day that the testimony was taken in Texas, I mentioned January 21st, 2009, that very day, New Scientist published a cover story on the Tree of Life. And that cover story goes through the proceedings of the NAS and Nature and Science and everybody, and it quotes an army of evolutionary biologists who say that genetically, the Tree of Life lies in tatters. That it's being cut down.
Yes, I remember that article because they were talking about the horizontal gene transfer that I brought up in the beginning of the 10th Foundation.
Well, no, I know, and I watched that very carefully. But your assertion that genetics confirms the Tree of Life is false, and I could establish that.
So you're suggesting then that in my videos for caniform, cladogram, and the feliform families, those two videos, you saw them, right?
I watched 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I watched the phylogeny challenge. I didn't watch all of your videos. And I spent hours with your videos this week.
I was asked for specific ones to spare you time.
Yes.
And I gave three from the Foundational Falsehood series and those two. Since you're going to be addressing the phylogeny challenge, you would need to see those two. And
I'd love to see those two. I bet you can tell I would like to, and I will watch those too. But let me give you some of these quotes that if these evolutionary biologists are right, then you're wrong, Aaron. And genetics
again
tears apart the Tree of Life. It tears it apart. That's why they published a story titled Darwin Was Wrong on the Tree of Life.
I remember the story and I know what it pertained out of the Tree of Life.
No, it took the whole branches, the twigs.
No, it took
it
the roots.
It slaughtered them.
Just
it's,
that.
No, you're wrong.
And it was based on...
You didn't read it. You're wrong. The last time I read it was today. I read the whole article. And I have quotes here. These are references to all these refereed scientific journals.
But if I may, I mean, you also quoted me back, what, a dozen times incorrectly?
All right, so I can't...
conversation?
Right. So I didn't know whatever you were pointing out in your first video. I got it totally wrong. So let me tell you why these evolutionary biologists are saying that Darwin was wrong on the Tree of Life, right?
Okay.
Let me give you some of the reasons. This is from the proceedings of the NAS. European researchers examined more than 500,000 genes from 181 prokaryotes. Now I know they don't have a nucleus. And found that 80% of them could not be interpreted as forming the branches of a Tree of Life. 80%.
Exactly.
Then they say this turns out to be the rule rather than the exception, even for eukaryotes, even for organisms that have cells with a nucleus. The University of California at Davis has compared 2,000 genes that are common to humans, frogs, sea squirts, sea urchins, fruit flies, and nematodes. In theory, they should have been able to use the gene sequences, like you claim, to construct an evolutionary tree showing the relationships. They failed. The problem was that the different genes told contradictory stories. Michael,
just spare some time. It is what I told you at the beginning it was going to be, where it relates to viruses and horizontal gene transfer.
We're not viruses. No, they said prokaryotes, but they said it's also true.
Viruses are not prokaryotes. They're not even alive.
No, right, exactly. Sorry, I apologize. No, they're saying not only is this true of prokaryotes, it's also true of eukaryotes. They said it's also obviously significantly true of plants and animals, multicellular. Let me give you a couple more quotes. All right, University of California biologist Michael Sivinen,
Let me just jump to the end because I know the article. I know what it means. I already told you.
You completely misrepresented what it means. It's about humans. It's about human DNA. That's what the article's about. Yeah, let me do a few more quotes from this article. I've done most of my quotes.
We're already an hour into this. We haven't started the discussion.
Let me do a few more because this is my proof that your claim is wrong, that genetics proves the tree. That claim is wrong, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of scientists who agree with me.
What is the phylogeny challenge?
That anatomy, fossils, genetics, everything we look at will confirm a tree of life evolutionary pathway.
That's not the phylogeny challenge.
All right. I can't say Darwinist. I can't say evolutionist. Can't say natural causes. Eugenie Scott said I can't say evidences.
What the phylogeny challenge is. In that video toward the end, I repeated
it. We played your two quotes that said what it is, that everything we see confirms.
But that's not the challenge.
All right, go ahead.
That's a statement.
All right, what is it?
Not the challenge.
What is the challenge?
The challenge is for you to show where the mystic division is. See if this sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Where is the line between what is created and what is related? It's a distinction of kinds.
I'll tell you our best effort toward answering that question.
I was hoping that you'd have the exact quote ready, but I guess not.
I'll tell you our best effort toward answering that question. All right? And I'll reference it.
Are you saying that you don't have an answer to that question?
I'll give you our best answer. All right? And I'll take this from Eugenie Scott's own website, the National Center of Science and Education. She has an article about a scientist that I interviewed in studio just recently, him and his department in Tennessee at the college they built, Bryan College. They have a baraminology project. And this is a creationist project to identify the original created kinds. And even though Eugenie Scott is an evolutionist and she's an atheist, and they really despise creationists, even though all that, they admitted that this Christian baraminology project was amazingly rigorous. They said it was surprisingly rigorous. Of course, they didn't like it, but it's a mathematical effort to quantize differences in living organisms and extinct organisms and determine the created kinds.
Yes, you've gone through a great deal of effort to try to duplicate, but you still haven't answered the challenge.
Well, I don't know yet. I don't know where all the divisions are, but if evolution were true, we shouldn't be able to spot
division.
All these
if creationism
species.
Creationism is true of anything. If creationism is true, or how would I phrase this?
How about this? A few years ago, snake DNA was found in cows. Snake DNA. Now, that's peer reviewed.
They found. Okay. But anyway, you're going to find some things that are common with something else.
Well, about the NAS?
Going back to the challenge is to show me the created kinds as distinguished from the related. The created from the related. Show me where it is. Because the creationists claim that there shouldn't be anything you could trace beyond the original archetype. And, of course, everything is. I mean, you say that there's no way we could come from apes, and now I hope you realize that we are.
Of course not.
Classified as a subset of apes.
Of course, we are 30% different from supposedly our closest living relatives.
But we are still
30% different.
We're still in that classification.
And in only 5 million years, Arend, at the pace it would take for one substitution.
We're still apes. We are classified as apes.
For one genetic substitution to replicate itself throughout the entire population, such that you have millions of differences from chimps to human beings to Homo sapiens, For that to happen in 8 million years, you pick your time frame. I don't care.
How many different kinds of apes
it's I don't care. It's mathematically impossible
to get millions as apes?
To get millions of changes. You're trying to change the subject.
I'm not trying to change the subject. This is the biological challenge. You're trying to argue that we could not have come from apes when we, in fact, are apes.
Okay. Now,
so do you understand
the reason it would be impossible to get the human genome from the ape genome. The reason it's impossible in your time frame is because the time it takes to get one substitution, one random mutation to replicate through an entire population takes X number of generations. And we now know with the enormous differences between chimp DNA and human DNA, we can begin to quantify the challenge of the millions of changes that have to occur between chimps and humans, and it would take hundreds of millions, if not billions of years.
Aside from the fact that Kenneth Miller already addressed this and showed that it is not impossible.
You'd have to say how that is.
Do you understand? Do you understand that ducks and falcons, for example, have many, many genetic differences, right?
I imagine.
Oh, yeah, but they're both birds.
I haven't looked at their
genomes. I mean, they're both birds.
Yeah.
Right?
They are.
Okay. Now, ducks and geese, are they closer than ducks and falcons?
I would imagine it depends if you look at their anatomy RNA or their DNA or their place in the strata in the fossil record. I imagine that would depend.
Ducks
because
and geese?
You'd get a different evolutionary pathway if you look at the DNA versus the RNA.
Would you say
that
ducks and geese are more closely related than ducks and falcons?
I would think, but I don't know. But I would think if we do a superficial analysis, right? If you looked at an animal that has dorsal fins, pectoral fins, and a fin tail, you'd say, look how close they are. They look the same. But then I tell you, well, the one's a dolphin, the other's a shark. And you'd say they're totally on opposite sides of the tree. So when there's overwhelming...
In the video for falsifying phylogeny, I go to explain the superficial similarities. The surface similarities don't matter. It's what's at the core, where you can tell an ichthyosaur is a reptile versus a whale that is a mammal,
the ultimate,
a tuna that is a fish.
The ultimate core is the DNA. And it turns out that an army of evolutionary biologists are saying the DNA...
I read the article. I know what the article means.
No, you did not, Aaron.
Yes, I did. So explain. Okay.
Okay, what did it say about human DNA? What did it say? You think it's only about prokaryotes or something.
Uprooting the tree of life.
What did it say about human DNA, the article?
Answer my challenge, if you would please.
I did.
The phylogeny. No, you didn't.
I said the best we know. We're making
for you to show where the archetype is. Show the mystic division.
Well, I don't
provide a definition kinds.
Okay, I'm not personally
omniscient. I can identify one.
I don't know every kind that was created.
Any kind. Distinguish any two specially created animals that science would generally consider closely related.
Turtles
is. Where
did turtles
find two?
Aaron, where do turtles come from?
Turtles are early diapsids. Turtles are anapsids, and there's still speculating
where do they come
on
from?
Whether what?
Where did they come from?
I'm trying to answer the
all
question.
All right, I apologize.
Turtles. The definition for turtles has fluctuated. Whether they are a subset of diapsids with an early divergence, or whether they diverge from before the emergence of diapsids.
That's because there's no evidence of where turtle. You can't name me the animal that turtles came from with naming any textbook or paleontologist, leading paleontologist who would agree with you, because it's unknown. It's a supposed ancestor. Okay, what did turtles evolve from? What creature?
Solenodontosaurus is one of the oldest of the anthracosaurs. Right, and then it goes into the cotylosaurs, and cotylosaurs are also prior to anapsids and the diapsid division. As a matter of fact, the anapsid division and the synapsid division are believed to have occurred at about the same time due to the evidence in the fossil record. And last week you told me that there was no evidence for the emergence of dinosaurs either, that there was no transitional species for them. Yes, there is. By the way, did you see the ninth foundational falsehood of creationism?
Yes, I saw that.
Okay. Do you accept now that there are transitional species?
No, I do not.
You know the definition.
Yeah.
I provided it. A definition held in common by both creationists and science.
Yeah, you say everything is a transitional species, and I say if evolution were true,
and you know from the video that I don't.
Blends. We should only see.
You know,
you said there are millions
in
the fossil record.
That I don't believe that.
You said the fossil record has millions of transitional forms.
No, I didn't.
Millions.
No, I didn't.
You did.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
All right. No, you did.
I said I gave a specific definition, the most rigid definition. And then I listed, and I said, not millions, I said hundreds that fit the specific definition agreed upon by both creationists and scientists. Do you remember that definition?
Go ahead and give it. Go ahead.
Okay. Definition for transitional species. Let me see if I can drum this up real quick.
And by the way, I would assert there's no origin of the bat, for example. There's no origin
of the
bat. Yes,
there is, and I show that too in another video.
It's easy to claim, but then when there are experts in that field who are evolutionary biologists, and they assert, no, there's not.
For public consumption, yes, there is in the fossil record. Yes, there is. And I show it in one of my videos to Gear Up, for example.
I assert there are no earlier organisms that you can show that flowering plants came from, that turtles came from,
yes,
that backbones came from, that bats,
yes,
that fish, that trees. I assert that you can't get textbooks and paleontologists to agree with you because,
yes,
because experts in
on
these
every
fields
point.
On
yes,
every
I
point.
Can.
So turtles.
With
so paleontologists know
field.
Where turtles
if
came
I may.
From. Go ahead.
If I may, I got to remind you that you did say that every cosmologist agreed with you and against me. And
yes.
Thus far, I have not seen any who agree with you.
No.
But I found at least two who agree with me.
You're
Lawrence
wrong.
Krauss being
You're
one
wrong
of them.
That there are no measurements that could support your claim that the universe has no center.
I need measurements to support a positive claim that there is a center. If you don't have measurements, you can't have
right,
a center
fine.
By default.
I'm happy with all that.
And once again, you said there was this, and we're going backward now because you simply won't admit when you're wrong. Now, a transitional fossil, now this is according to a Young Earth creationist website, a transitional fossil is one that looks like it's from an organism intermediate between two lineages, meaning that it has some characteristics of lineage A, some characteristics of lineage B, and probably some characteristics partway between the two. Transitional fossils can occur between groups of any taxonomic level, such as between species, between orders, etc. Ideally, the transitional fossil should be found stratigraphically between the first occurrence of the ancestral lineage and the first occurrence of the descendant lineage. Now,
right.
I showed that definition.
That's not a valid definition, because if you find a fossil that looks like it's midway between a shark and a dolphin, then lo and
How
behold...
How could you have one between a shark and a dolphin?
If you found one that looked like it anatomically, if they were all extinct, you didn't know what you're looking at, and you found one and it looked like it was in the right strata and it was between them, you would be wrong because, in fact, it would not have been because evolutionists claim totally different evolutionary pathways.
Yes.
So just because you find something that superficially looks like and it happens to be buried somewhere near doesn't mean it's transitionary.
So when you're looking for a transition...
Yeah.
Between, following the lines that you expect to find a transition for.
I don't expect to find them.
Okay.
You do.
As a scientist, you know, you want to confirm objectively, honestly, whether these transitions exist.
If that were the case, right, if scientists wanted to objectively, if that was the thing, National Geographic would not have to have published an entire issue apologizing for publishing a known fraud of a dinosaur with fake feathers, Archaeoraptor, a known fraud where their own expert did the MRIs and all, and they said, this is fabricated. This is not a fossil. It was made from 6 or 7 different stones.
Every
we have a video of the scientist who did the work.
Every scientist who looked at it. I've talked to Steven Zirkus myself and his wife, which, by the way, apart from this one episode, they're really nice people. But I've talked to them, and the poor guy was duped. He bought a fraud. He didn't listen to the 6 scientists who told him that this is not legitimate. He went to a popular magazine. It's their fault. that they didn't accept the scientific analysis of it.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about him. I was talking about National Geographic.
Right.
And there is there's a tidal wave of reporting now of supposed refereed journals.
By the way, what did that fossil turn out to be?
It was a combination of multiple. It was a combination of multiple organisms. That's what it was. We just watched at our church. We showed the video of the scientist who was hired by National Geographic. This is just 2 weeks ago. We showed him in an interview explaining what all there were 6 or 7 different pieces that were glued together with modern materials. It was not two. It was 6 or 7.
Now,
well, I saw it 2 weeks ago.
One of them was a bird.
Well, then he didn't know how many it was.
Okay, one of them was a bird, an extinct bird whose name begins with a Y. It wasn't important, so I didn't put it to memory.
Yeah.
But the other one was Microraptor, a fully feathered, asymmetrical feathered, flying, or at least gliding, dinosaur.
Yeah, totally false. So,
well, how is it totally false?
This is my point.
How is it totally false, sir?
It's false.
How is it false?
Your recollection of it's false. I showed the DVD.
My recollection of what is false.
You think that this was a fossil that was put together from two pieces. It was
what?
6 or 7 pieces of different
organisms. Okay.
All right.
Even if we just concede that point just because you can't get past it, if we just let that go, it was two.
Do you know why I brought that up?
If you want to play the word game, fine. Why did you say that Microraptor was false? I'm not talking about Archaeoraptor. I'm talking about Microraptor.
Yeah, do you know why I brought this up, Arun Ra? I brought that up as one example because National Geographic is so huge of a tidal wave of reporting.
You're not going
to
answer the question?
Right, not right. I want to get back to the point. A tidal wave of reporting that the peer-reviewed process is in a crisis. There just a week ago, there's a scientist in Europe who has been publishing in Nature and Science for 20 years with fabricated data. There are volumes being published on fabricated data.
Okay,
and
let's look at the data directly then. Let's get back to the data itself, regardless what somebody says about it. Remember when I asked you whether answer forms, ducks, geese, swans, and so on, and say they're closer related than, say, falcons or emus. Would you say that's true?
Probably, yeah. I would assume so. I don't claim omniscient knowledge.
Would you accept that anseriforms and galliforms, being chickens and such, would you say they're related?
Chickens and what?
And anseriforms, ducks. Ducks, geese, swans.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I haven't looked at...
Would you say that there are more indications of similarity between galliforms and anseriforms than between them and emus? Or would you say that there's more similarity between hawks, galliforms and anseriforms than there are with
emus? I'm not going to answer any of those questions because I'm not an expert on their morphology, anatomy, their genetics.
It doesn't matter how expert you are.
And I don't.
This is the point that I was making. When you explore, the analysis, the morphology especially, it's obvious. You see that there is a closer relationship. And here's the important thing. Despite all the differences that all these different types of birds have, they're all birds, aren't they?
All right. You know what? While you're asking me this question, I got the quote on Archaeoraptor from National Geographic. The forgery was constructed from rearranged pieces of real fossils from different species. They found the head and upper body actually belong to a specimen of the primitive fossil bird Yarnernus. A 2002 study found that the tail belongs to a small-winged dromaeosaur. Microraptor, right? The legs and feet belong to an as yet unknown animal.
Okay,
so a primitive fossil bird, right?
Okay.
And a dinosaur's tail.
It started with a Y, and the tail was from Microraptor.
Yeah.
The four-winged flying dinosaur.
Yeah, I agree with all that. The only reason I brought that up is because of the phenomenon of the peer-reviewed process being in a crisis because fabricated data and forged fossils go far in today's world, especially when they reaffirm the prime axiom that evolution,
every scientist that looked at that, everyone expressed doubts as to its authenticity.
And good for them. Good for them. But that
$70,000.
And it proves my point that the peer-reviewed process is in a crisis, because what matters is the politics. The politics is what matters when it comes to.
So let's avoid politics then and get back to the data.
All right.
All those birds are birds, right?
I'm not going to answer any more questions about bird genomes
or
anatomy.
You're not going to agree that an emu is a bird?
I'm not interested.
Okay.
You make your point.
This is the phylogeny challenge.
Make your point.
You need to address phylogeny. You can't address quotes from some scientist. You've got to address the phylogeny.
And the Barrymenology Project at Bryan University is a rigorous
Project accept that emus are birds?
I haven't checked with them, but they're publishing their work. And Eugenie Scott's website said they're doing a rigorous job of it.
You did tell me that your purpose tonight was to answer my challenge, right?
Yes. And the way that I am doing that is to show that your assertion that genetics, anatomy, the fossil record strata all conform to the Darwinian tree of life is false on its face, since an army of evolutionary biologists disagree with you.
And is that why you refuse to admit that emus
are birds? No, that's not why.
Okay. Why do you refuse to admit that emus are birds?
I have no reason other than I don't want to test my knowledge of bird anatomy, physiology, genome.
Okay. Well,
I don't want to do it. You
right,
could make
you
your assertion. Go ahead.
That even as vastly different as ducks and chickens and hawks and emus are, they are all birds, right?
Yes.
Okay. So as vastly different as you want to paint humans and chimpanzees, you could also throw in gorillas and orangutans, and if you wanted to go further, you could put in gibbons and siamangs, and if you wanted to go further, you could put in Ardipithecus and Australopithecus and so on.
You would include and gibbons. I wouldn't. I just include gorillas and gibbons, but not and gibbons. But go ahead.
I would have to include and gibbons, too, and myself and you.
Yes.
We are all in the category of apes in exactly the same way that ducks and geese and emus are all birds.
Yeah,
in the category.
In the same way that apes write books about their origins. The same exact way.
Well,
we're all the
same.
Since
eagles have very few resemblance. I mean, you could talk about how different eagles are from ducks, but you know, they're still birds.
And they write articles about philosophy.
Not all of them, no.
No, they don't. Hey, Aaron, part of your tree of life that you claim exists, you display visually the ancestors of whales. You show Rhodocetus, Pachycetus, Ambulocetus. And I imagine you're aware that the discoverer of two of those has come out. He's on video. He said, for example, with his Rhodocetus, he said, you know what? We found more of the bones. So while I thought that it would have had fins like a whale, we now know that it didn't, and so therefore it would not have a fluke tail, so I shouldn't have drawn it with a fluke tail, and it didn't have the kinds of fins that whales have, and yet, even though he's acknowledged that, now you still keep him, as do evolutionists generally, you still keep Rhodocetus in the whale ancestry. The same thing with his other discovery, Pachycetus, he thought it lived in the water, and they found more of the skeleton. Now they've got it with four legs. It lived on land, yet that is still in the whale ancestry. Even when the discoverer completely botched the body form, the environment that it lived in, but he said it was an ancestor to a whale. That's how he got famous. And so it's still there in your chart when the discoverer has said, you know what? I flubbed both of these big time. Stop the tape. Stop the tape. Hey, this is Bob Enyart. All of a sudden, we're completely out of time. So please tune in tomorrow for the rest of this program. God bless you.
Now you can subscribe to Bob Enyart's monthly Bible study DVDs. These verse-by-verse Bible study videos are great for family Bible study or even starting your own neighborhood Bible study. Each month, you get four or five Bible study sessions on two DVDs. You can subscribe by calling 1-800-8-NYARD or online at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.